podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Terror Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Sean McGuigan and today I am joined by one of the best auditors Dumbarton has to offer. It is Fraser Clark. Fraser, how are you?
I am very well. I mean, I feel like our club poet might have something to say about that, but I'm quite happy to be second behind him.
Listen, I've heard some of his poems and I would rate you higher than him.
Maybe he could write the poetry and I could read it out and then that would be a sort of perfect combination.
There we go. You're both joint top. Now, you know something, see, before we start, I think we should put to bed a conspiracy theory that we started, or that we kind of discussed the last time we'd done a podcast together, about East Fife's bonnets. Now, if you remember, we were highly suspicious of the fact that East Fife had announced Dick Campbell as a new manager and then had East Fife bonnets on sale within 24 hours. We really didn't think that the supply chain of bonnets was that quick, that you could just ship them from wherever to Methil, like within hours. However, you were contacted afterwards and you were actually given an explanation.
Yeah, I was very glad that the individual connected with East Fife, who I decided to sort of not name check, but he knew it was him, was straight into my DMs as soon as that podcast came out to explain that, unfortunately, they've had club-branded bonnets in the shop before Christmas. So it's just a total coincidence, or, like we suspected, they've had Dick Campbell lined up to be their next manager since before Christmas. So, that theory has not been disproven.
I think it was disproven. I appreciate where you're coming from. I think it was disproven. I just think it's important that if you come up with a conspiracy theory and it turns out it's absolute toot, you should just hold your hands up. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're a member of, QAnon, then maybe just something for you to think about there.
Or a member of Greg McDonald's family, who may think that East Fife's board had it in from an earlier stage than they may have actually had it in from. Maybe they saw these bonnets coming into the club shop like a week before Christmas and they were all just like, oh, kids, you're going to have to like scale down your Christmas present expectations. Dad's not going to have a job come January.
Perhaps. But listen, how are you? Because I think we've both had, footballing-wise, we've both had difficult weeks, but you okay?
Yeah, I mean, my Tuesday night was thankfully spent watching Stranraer batter Dumbarton 5-0 in my living room and not at Stair Park, so that was okay. Good. Then I had the improvement of spending 4.5 hours in a council budget meeting yesterday, and now I've got this tonight, so my week is just getting progressively better.
That's good that the budget meeting that lasted almost 5 hours was better than Stranraer 5 Dumbarton. Now, but I suppose it would be. But you know something, we will get to that, because tonight we are going to discuss three games, one from the Championship, one from League One, and one from League Two, and then try and make sense about what it might mean. But the lower leagues are possibly at the silliest they've been in some time, so whether we'll be able to do that, I am not entirely sure. But firstly, we are starting with Morton 0, Inverness Caledonia Thistle 2, goals from Billy Mackay and Sean McAllister, sealed a 2-0 win, a surprise, I suppose, 2-0 win for Inverness. Morton have been on a 16-game unbeaten run, their best run since, I think it was 79-80. Yes, Inverness were 3 games unbeaten, but it was 3 draws. And I think the interesting thing about this game and why we wanted to discuss it is because this game, along with Morton's defeat to Dundee United in midweek, it really kind of draws the threads of the promotion playoffs and the relegation playoffs that much closer. So now we have a situation where Morton in fourth and Inverness in ninth are only separated by 7 points. And I'm a wee bit wary of saying this, but there was discussion in Pine Bovril that Morton manager Dougie Emery had said before the Inverness match that there was still a bit to do in terms of ensuring their survival in the Championship. Now, I went looking for his comments and I couldn't quite find it, so I don't really want to say that he definitely said this. However, in your opinion, who is still in the ninth place equation, I suppose?
I suppose Morton without George Oakley, with a goalkeeper, either Jamie McDonald, who didn't look at all fit at the weekend, or with Ryan Mullen, who is, I think, still broken, and no George Oakley, like we said, aren't very good. So maybe 7 points isn't a huge gap. I look at it, I think they'll be fine. But I feel like my opinion on the Championship changes quite regularly, and I wrote down all the team names and just like wee little things about them that were making me think that they could be in danger or they could not. So I would still have Inverness probably as my favourites for ninth place if we take that Arbroath are gone. Now, you got a better view of Arbroath on Friday night than I did, although I did watch the game on the telly, and that was a great win for them, fantastic comeback, and it might lead to something, but also looked like one of those games that, as much as Arbroath won it, Raith chucked it away.
Yeah.
Like, it was lost by Raith as much as it was won by Arbroath. And they still had to score the goals, they still had to get across the line. But I think it looks like it's going to be too big a stretch for them. And then you've got, obviously, Inverness, Queen's Park, Ayr, Dunfermline, Morton. I don't see a great deal between those. I think Inverness probably have the weakest squad. I'm not wholly convinced by Duncan Ferguson. I like the idea of Duncan Ferguson. I enjoy all the kind of the pantomime about it, and I really enjoy seeing pictures of him just like roaring on the touchline. Or like,
that's quite an unusual thing to enjoy pictures of.
Yeah, did you see there was pictures of him shoveling snow with children at a game? Yes. I think it was just that was a really nice picture. I sent that round to quite a few people. Just no context, just that picture.
You say that, but what you don't realise, Fraser, is that actually none of those children wanted to do it.
He just
scared them so much and forced them to do it, like Victorian chimney sweeps.
Yeah, I imagine...
They'd rather be on the PlayStations.
Yeah, I imagine that Duncan Ferguson probably can be quite persuasive to anybody who's smaller than him, which is probably round about 97% of the population. Yeah. So I would still have them down as being favourites. But then you look at it, like, it feels like Queen's Park have turned a bit of a corner under Callum Davidson, but they're still in danger. Ayr, the Scott Brown thing, could kind of go either way. Like, I'm still not sure which way that's going to go. I think they'll be fine. It doesn't look like it's going to be a total disaster. But I think the jury's very much still out. He's not came in and, you know, won four or five games, got them playing amazing football, and you think, nah, they're going to be fine. Dunfermline look rubbish. Got a great result at the weekend and then a not-so-great result midweek. And that leaves you with Morton on their 7-point sort of buffer between ninth place. Do I think they're in relegation trouble? No. Could that change very quickly in a league like the Championship? Yeah, it probably could, especially if you take two of their best players out of that squad.
Yeah, so I'm the same as you, and that's why I think it's quite often in this podcast, although we are looking back on stuff that's happened, it becomes very difficult to actually look forward to what could happen, because a lot of it doesn't really make any sense. There's no kind of rhyme or reason. But certainly in terms of this game, and if you want to, from the Morton point, if you want to extend it forward to the Dundee United match, you mentioned about George Oakley being missing. I hadn't checked, but there was a post on Pine Bovril, and just the record with and without Oakley. So he hasn't started 10 games this season, and they haven't won any. It's 4 draws and 6 defeats. So that really is relegation form when they're missing them. So whether Imrie can come up with something, and it isn't just Oakley, to be fair. Now, Mullen was back for the Dundee United game. I didn't think he looked great for the goal, to be fair. But did have an exceptional save in the, I think it was the second half from, I think it was Doherty, but I'd have to go back and look at it. I think it was Doherty. But his save from close range was absolutely incredible. But he is very much an upgrade on Jamie McDonald. Like, Jamie McDonald hasn't even been on the bench recently for Morton. I think he came back for that Inverness game, for the Raith Rovers game actually beforehand, almost out of necessity. Like, whether he'd even have been in the squad if Mullen had been fit. I'm not sure, but certainly didn't look particularly fit against Inverness. The first goal that Mackay scored, okay, you can maybe let him away with that. I thought his position was a wee bit weird. Maybe he could have come out for it, I'm not entirely sure. It all happened very quickly, so you can maybe give him the benefit of the doubt. But for McAllister's free kick, I mean, he was so slow in getting down, and even though he was slow in moving his feet and getting down, you still thought, right, as long as you've got a strong hand, you're going to keep that out. He somehow still managed to lay it in. And I think that's the thing with Morton. They are, we've very much spoken about them being the greater than the sum of their parts. But at this moment in time, it kind of feels like they're running out of parts. So they also said before the I think before the Inverness game, Doug Emery, that Ian Wilson, who went off in that Wraith game, was probably out for the season. So that spine, or part of the spine, I suppose, because Wilson, I think, is so good in the middle of the park with Alan Power. But without him alongside him, Power's had a good season. But I think if you deny him space, like he's advancing in years, his ability to, like with Wilson alongside him, I just think he's a far better player. So without him, without Oakley, I'm starting to suspect that fourth place might be up for grabs. And a couple of weeks ago, I didn't think that at all. I don't think they'll get sucked into ninth. In terms of our growth point, I think they will finish 10th. I agree with what you said in terms of, I think Arbroath deserved a lot of credit on Friday night in terms of, bearing in mind they must have, I think, that would have been 9 goals they've conceded from the end of the Inverness game through the Queen's Park game, which is one of the most inept performances I've seen from anybody this season, and then 2-0 down to Wraith. So to turn that around, fair play to their kind of resilience, I suppose. But I wouldn't necessarily say I was impressed with them from a footballing perspective. So I do still think they will end up finishing 10th. I think Morton will stay out of trouble. I keep thinking that Airdrie might get dragged in, but they keep grinding out results. But I still think, it's funny that you've mentioned Inverness. Like, were you not necessarily a turning point, but were you not quite impressed by how they managed to, or how they went about this 2-0 win? Because I mean, it was two reasonably early goals, but they very much kept Morton at arm's length for the remainder of the game.
I think it'll be one of those ones where you maybe look in a couple of weeks' time and you analyse how good a result that was. Did they get Morton basically at the perfect time? Above all else, Morton, and it's such a daft thing to say, but we know how football is. Like, Morton were due a defeat. Like, it was going to happen. This was the perfect opportunity to happen. Now, from Inverness' point of view, they could help build them a wee bit of momentum from this. And if 3-4 weeks' time we're looking at it and they're sitting seventh in the league, you might go, right, well, that was the result that really just kick-started their run to survival. I don't know how much you can read into it when Morton were without two good players, when they had a goalkeeper who certainly chucked in one goal. Like, that's like, you know, when you see that a goal's been scored from a direct free kick and you're like, oh, I'm quite looking forward to this. And then you see that, it's like really underwhelming. It's quite disappointing. Like, you want it to just like fly into top corner and it's just like the keeper kind of goes down in stages and then palms it into his own net. It's a wee bit underwhelming. I think possibly as well, because I don't know a great deal about a lot of Inverness's players. They brought in a lot of players who I'm looking at and going, right, well, he looked okay in this game, but maybe a wee bit iffy in this game, that we don't fully know what they're made of. And maybe that's why I've got them down as ninth, because I'm looking at them going, oh, I don't know who these guys are. I know who most of Queen's Park squad is, I know most Ayr's squad is or whatever. These guys, I don't know who they are, but if they've signed for Inverness and they're ninth in the championship, probably not that good. Like, you know, you look at their calibre and their background and you're like, maybe they're not that good. Maybe they will come good. I just look at it and I think, from Morton's point of view, I think they've almost got the situation that Steny have got, where even if they had a terrible run of form, I don't think there's enough teams below them who are good enough to all, you know, bump them down and they end up in ninth place somehow. I look at that Inverness squad and I just look at the general direction it feels like the club's heading in. Ignore the solar farm or whatever it is that's going outside the ground, which is obviously...
Battery farm, sorry.
Which is obviously, like, you know, huge for them, and I think everyone's delighted about that. But ignore that. It feels like the other clubs around them are maybe going somewhere, maybe with the exception of Dunfermline, but even they've had a few green shoots. And I just think if you were to ask me to put money on it, I would probably go for Inverness. If I was to ask you to put money on it, who would you go for? And not just out of the kind of hope of Dunfermline.
Well, do you know something? There is, like, anybody that's kind of around ninth place, if they were to get to end up being ejected from the championship because they lose the playoffs, and actually, I don't think any of them will. I think whoever finishes ninth will end up winning the playoffs. I'd be okay with all of them. Like, if Dunfermline went down, that would be funny. If Inverness went down, they always beat us, so that's great. If Queen's Park went down, that's fine, because it's probably a wee bit more difficult to enjoy Queen's Park when they're propped up by Willie Hockey. If who else is in there? If Airdrie finished ninth and got relegated via the playoffs, then that's fine, because I've never heard the end of it since saying that they were probably finishing the bottom two in the preview pod. So any of these teams go down, that's absolutely fine. in all honesty, I don't think they will. In terms of taking your point about Inverness, I think why I agree with you, I'm not entirely sure about Duncan Ferguson. I don't know a lot about their new signings. I was quite impressed with them on Saturday, though, from what I saw. And I think when you have somebody of the calibre of Billy Mackay up front, who, like we talk about Brian Graham, like somebody who's coming to the twilight period of his career, but is still just consistently scoring goals. Like Billy Mackay, maybe isn't he quite at that level in terms of goals, but again, it's just like so consistent. Like, they're very, very lucky to have him. They're like really, really lucky. And he probably is getting to the end of his career now, and I really hope the Inverness fans appreciate his, I suppose, all that he's done for him. But I do think that Alex Samuel, who they brought in, is like a really, really good foil for him. Inverness's concern would be, I'm fairly certain that Billy Mackay went off at the weekend. Whether that was to do with an injury or whether it was just to protect him, I'm not entirely sure. I do think that they are in the reckoning for ninth. I would say the teams now that I would discount, I actually would say Dunfermline. I don't think Dunfermline will finish ninth. You were very critical. You kind of slagged them off a second ago. Do you want to kind of justify that slightly?
I think the result on Tuesday night, so they got that cracking result against Ayr at the weekend, and I thought, right, maybe this is them just starting to kick on, and then they followed up by losing to Airdrie, and you think, that's maybe a home game with Airdrie, a team round about you in the league, that's a good opportunity to put down a bit of a marker and to build on that result of the weekend, and they didn't do it. Now, I saw Chris Kane wasn't in the squad at all. Now, obviously, I keep track of everything Chris Kane does and have done since he left us, because he's probably one of the only strikers that Dumbarton have had in my entire lifetime that could be described as something close to prolific. Like, I don't think there's anybody who's really got near his 1-2 goal record in the time I've been supporting us. So that's a bit ridiculous. And I saw he was rested for fatigue. And I thought, okay, right, fair enough. He's not played a lot of football this season. Went onto the Dunfermline thread to see what they were saying. Thought, is that as big a miss as it is in my head? Because I base Chris Kane off how big a miss he was for us 10 years ago. And the Dunfermline fans seem to say, yeah, it was. Like, there's not really anybody who does what Chris Kane does in that squad. We've spoken about it all season. Like, they just lack a bit of quality going forward. And Kane might not be the prolific goal scorer that he was when he was with us on loan a decade ago. But he just gives you something. You saw that with the goal that he pinched the ball off Sean McGinty, ran in on goal. Like, I saw him do that a good 2 or 3 times as a Dumbarton player, where he just identifies the centre half who's maybe not very good with the ball at his feet, and just he'll do that all game, and eventually you know he's going to give you it, or he's just going to lump it long. So it's that defending from the front thing as much as anything. If they keep Chris Kane fit, I think they'll be fine, because I think he's just a nuisance at that level. He's just a handful for defenders. Like I said, he can defend from the front as well. So if they are 1-0 up and they need somebody to take the pressure off, run the channel, you know, put the ball out for a throw-in or something, just force a defender into a wee mistake and buy the team a few seconds, Chris Kane is the man to do that. If he gets injured for an extended period, you're kind of looking at the other options again, just like we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Like, Craig Whiten or Lewis McCann, are they going to score the goals to keep you up? They're not Billy Mackay, you know, they're not anywhere near that sort of category. And although Kane's maybe not in the category in terms of like a natural goal scorer like Mackay, his overall impact for the team is probably not dissimilar, just in terms of the way that he transforms it. So you'll know, like, if you see an Inverness team sheet, Billy Mackay's on the bench, you think, right, that's a result. Probably look at Dunfermline team sheet now and go, Chris Kane's on the bench, right, that's a positive result for us. And I think that's so much of football and so much of this season, when it's so tight, could come down to availability, injuries, somebody picking up a really bad injury, missing 6 weeks, somebody getting a daft red card, missing 3 games, which is probably why it's a bit daft to sit and try and work out where everyone's going to go at the end of the season. But I'm not convinced by Dunfermline at all. And if they ended up in ninth, I would not be surprised.
So Chris Kane is why, or one of the reasons why I think they won't finish ninth. I don't think we'll get in the top four, partly because of their injury worries and other reasons that were spoken about. But see, like last time we spoke about Dunfermline, whatever it was, 3 or 4 weeks ago, they just had that 5-0 evisceration by Morton, and they were dreadful. And at that point, I thought, my goodness, they're in big trouble. However, I think the tail end of the transfer window has just changed things for them. And like how I read the comments from McPake, was that Kane had been left out against Airdrie just because he hadn't played a lot of football and they were just trying to keep him fresh, or that was like a kind of illness rather than an injury. If that's the case, I would expect them to play against Raith. And it's interesting because every single league game this season, and actually a League Cup game, because Raith are about to play Dunfermline in their six, five stab of the season. In every league game, I've been pretty confident. Even the League Cup tie that ended up 1-1, I was quite confident. I thought we had a better team than them. The only one I wasn't confident about was the Scottish Cup, which, funnily enough, was the easiest one. But I just think this Dunfermline team now, like Chris Kane leading the line, I agree, he's not a world beater. However, he's the best forward Dunfermline's got. You can watch Dunfermline's highlights, let's say the last 11, 12 minutes, and see every time Jakubiak's involved. Yes, he might go heading down the channel and beat a man or whatever. And you say, that's good. But see, when it comes to finishing, he won't be doing it correctly. Or you could watch Dunfermline's highlights and Craig Whiting will be up top, and you could potentially not see him for those 10 minutes. Or see him doing very little that's positive. McCann, who, let's face it, isn't a forward, again, might be anonymous for those highlights. Every time I've watched Dunfermline with Chris Kane up front, he's involved in every single thing that's positive. Drop him deep. He's an absolute, you've described him as a nuisance. You're absolutely right. You can keep defenders, like, you can just occupy them. And I think he probably has to drop down to the Championship to, rather than just being a pest and somebody who can link kind of the middle of the park to up front, to become a goal scorer as well. And certainly at Dumbarton, like, he did score goals. And I think he will do for Dunfermline at this level. So if he's back on Saturday, I think suddenly in that final third, they're fine. I have enjoyed watching Malachi Fagan Walcott. I hope I've said that. He's got so many names. I hope I've said them in the correct order. But like, I think he's been great so far, and probably getting better and better since he arrived. And then Matty Todd in the middle of the park, just as a massive upgrade. So as much as I put the boot into James McPake, I don't think he's a great manager at all. I think Dunfermline will have more than enough on the park to make sure that they keep their heads above water. So I think they're fine. I think Airdrie's fine. Like, I keep thinking they might be in trouble, but they keep pulling out brilliant wins. They won at Tannadice, obviously. They won at East End Park in the middle of the week. I do wonder if they could end up finishing fourth, potentially. I think they should probably be looking up rather than down. The one I am maybe less enthused about might be Ayr United, but you kind of alluded to the fact that you think they might be okay. I'm not so sure.
I just think I'm not really sure what to make of Scott Brown yet. It's been quite hit and miss. I mean, the thing that I suppose to a degree alarms me is that a couple of his wins have been very high scoring for both teams, and there's only so often you can do that. Mm-hmm. Like, you hear maybe, and I know a lot of people have got on at Raith for the amount of games they've won by one goal this season, or the amount of games that they've won in the last minute. And it does, you know, feels like it might wear off. It might not be a sustainable way to continue winning football matches. And I look at it and I just think, like, that maybe has to be a warning sign. Like, it doesn't feel like there's been a huge bounce from Scott Brown going in there. That performance has improved maybe a wee bit, and the football's maybe not quite as, what's the word, attritional, dreadful in the eye as it was under Lee Bullen. But it doesn't feel like they've maybe got an awful lot better. And you look at that squad, I think that squad's not a bad squad for the league, but there's not a great deal about it. Like, and if they've not got a Dougie Imrie managing them, then you look at that. So you look at that squad on paper and you think it's maybe not dissimilar to Morton. With the right manager, maybe you can cook up something special there. Is Scott Brown the right manager? I had thought he might come in and just from being there, being the character that he is, being the name that he is, coming from, you know, such an illustrious career, he might really lift things, even if it was just five or six games. Because it looks like, he says, having never been a football manager, looks like the easiest thing to do as a manager is go in and start really well. Like, you go in as a manager, you win your first five or six games, you think this is great, that buys you time, and then starts to go off a cliff. And I try always never to judge a manager by their first five or six games, because, like, Steve Aitken's time at us was broadly successful. his first two games, he beat Hibs and beat St Mirren. And I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. Do I want us to go into the Premiership? You know, how would we survive? How would that be? And then we didn't win another game till October. So I think it must be the easiest thing in the world to go in and like have that new manager bounce. And it's not really happened. It's just been a sort of new manager continuation, a bit of a flat line.
So it's weird. I think you're right. I think they play a wee bit more, they're more aesthetically pleasing than they were under Liebelin. I would agree with that. I think the way it started, so I can't remember what order the games were. Like the one against Queen's Park, I didn't think they looked great on the day. That looked like two poor teams, but you kind of knock the fact that they got 3 points. So beat Queen's Park. I thought they looked quite decent at Somerset Park against Dundee United, but lost 2-1. They looked compact, I suppose, at Ibrox against Rangers when they only lost 2-0. They won 3-2 against Airdrie at the Shibury. I suppose if you want to be negative about that, Airdrie's defending on the day was absolutely diabolical. They didn't look great against Raith when they lost 2-1 at home. They won 4-3 against Partick, albeit Partick's goalkeeping wasn't great on the day.
He looked like a hologram for one of the goals. It was like a hologram of a goalkeeper. It just went right through him. Didn't really understand what he was doing.
As far as where he hasn't won, I don't think he's been on a winning team since October 2022.
That makes a lot of sense.
But hasn't played a lot of games, to be fair. But hasn't played a lot of games. But I think it's something like 10, and he hasn't won a game. However, I do think the game at East End Park on Saturday, which again, we probably could have led with this in terms of how important it was, felt like a 6-pointer in terms of, are you looking up or are you looking down? But it was just weird. Like, the fellow won this easily. Like, it was a very, very straightforward win, as straightforward as a win, I think, as the Fairman have had all season. Ayr were so anemic. Barely had a shot at goal, if any. And then you look at the team that Scott Brown started, and I think you're right to talk about, I'm not entirely sure about Scott Brown. So I'm not entirely sure. I could understand them wanting to bring in a new goalkeeper. I think they have toiled in that position this season. But to bring in a teenager and Josh Clark, who looks okay, but I'm not entirely sure he's an upgrade, and I'm not entirely sure he's ready for Championship football. Albeit maybe I'm being a bit harsh. I don't know. But like, one of their better players, of course, is Logan Chalmers. He seems to have dropped out of picture. Now, maybe he's not quite fit. Maybe he's picked up a knock in training and they've just not told us. I don't know. But for him to drop out the picture and Scott Brown not to pick him and play like Fraser Bryden, for example, again, a youngster, but not somebody who's as good as Logan Chalmers. So things, I do think that his record so far is up and down. But if I was to pick a team who are my favourites to finish ninth, I might go with Ayr. And then they play Inverness next, which is absolutely huge. Then Queen's Park, then Airdrie, then Raith. That's quite a... Okay, I mean, Queen's Park are down there as well, but Callum Davidson seems to really have them playing. As much as Queen's Park are eighth at this moment in time, I think they'll be absolutely fine. So, I mean, there's only 9 games to go, so everybody's next few games are key. But I would suggest, I think anyway, that Ayr are the ones that I might pick for ninth rather than Inverness.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it, because you know those websites you can do where you guess all the scores and then it gives you the table at the end of the season? I don't know if you ever go on and do them. So I went on and did that for the Championship, which is how I got Inverness in ninth. But, well, I suppose it's obvious to say that all the teams down there are playing each other. Of course they are. It's a 10-team league and we've got, what, 6 teams involved in a relegation battle. They're literally all playing each other all the time. But it really hits home when you see that and you think, oh, hang on, like, Ayr go and win their next 3 games, they'll probably be fine because they're not only taking 3 points, they're also denying the opposition 3 points, and it's that whole cliched 6-pointer sort of games. I think it looks like great fun. I'm delighted that we're not involved in it in any way.
I still think though that whoever finishes ninth, I think we'll have too much for whoever is in the playoff spots. I mean, which we're about to discuss in terms of League One, especially like if you think if Ayr were to finish ninth, for example, Akeem Rose, let's say they were playing Hamilton, like Akeem Rose wouldn't be able to play, and he now feels like a key player for Hamilton. So I think it could also take like a not a record amount of points, I would have to go back and check, but a huge amount of points to stay out of bother this season. Like you might be looking at, I don't know, 43, something like that, to finish eighth. So again, there doesn't feel like there's a total diddy in the league this season. Arbroath, you would expect to finish 10th. I wouldn't say they're an absolute diddy. And then everybody above them feels much of a muchness. And if you have a team that finishes 9th, that a couple of weeks before the end of the season had a chance of finishing 5th, I think the playoff teams in League One have got a hard task ahead of them.
Yeah, and I also think that League One's not all that strong. So, you know, you'll have Hamilton there who have a fan base that despise their manager, who feel like they're hurtling backwards. Hamilton remind me a lot of Dumbarton, just in terms of you've got a manager who got you relegated and the fan base will never forgive him for that. And it just feels like they're never really going to... In fact, they're going to get worse. Like, it doesn't feel like they're building anything that's going to get much better there. Maybe one of the part-time teams, but then it's a big ask for them to get through playoffs. Maybe Cove, but I mean, they've not been great this season really at all. We will get to touch on Cove as well, and something that we were delighted to see returning on the Cove's website during the week. But yeah, I would fancy whoever finishes 9th to have more than enough to stay up, unless somebody goes on a horror run between now and the end of the season, loses all 8 games, loses maybe a couple of their best players to injury, something like that. Then maybe the momentum can shift. But at the moment, like you say, it does look like whoever ends up in 9th is probably only get decided in the last day of the season, and they probably won't be in a dreadful run of form. Might be like 3 wins out of 9 in the remaining games, something like that.
You've mentioned League One, so let's dip into it now. So, and let's dip into one of the best games of the season. Like, their highlights lasted about 11, 12 minutes, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. This is Montrose 4, Alloa 3. So Blair Lyons gave Montrose the lead. Taylor Stephen and Ethan Sutherland then turned the game on its head to put Alloa 2-1 up. Sean Dillon, with a very aesthetically pleasing header, made it 2-2. Kane Hester then made it 3-2 to Montrose. Then Bobby Wales made it 3-3. Then a late goal from Graham Webster ensured that all 3 points would stay at Lynx Park. Fraser, what did you make of this?
This was great fun. And actually, the first thing I should say is it's really enjoyable. I watched on Alloa's stream, on Alloa's YouTube channel. So their commentary is excellent with Kieran Mooney and Lewis, whose surname I don't know, but I have met. They're both excellent commentators. It was just really enjoyable. And also, I would say, in terms of aesthetically pleasing teams to watch, like the players that you were rhyming off who all scored goals, like Graham Webster, Blair Lyons, Taylor Stephen, Bobby Goals, Bobby Wales, like all really good guys to watch. So it's just thoroughly enjoyable. If that's kind of a taste of what's to come in the playoffs, then like sign me up, because I would happily watch that. It looked like great fun. And I think it was two teams who are probably playing full of confidence at the moment. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about the relegation battle on the other end, two teams who just look like they're really enjoying their football. Mm-hmm. Two managers who I rate hugely, mm-hmm. and really enjoy watching their teams based on what I've seen of Andy Graham's style. It reminds me a bit of Ian Murray when he came in, first of all. And I remember talking to Andy Graham about Ian Murray's style, and it was like, he used to say to us it'd be the last 10 minutes would be 1-0, and he'd be like, well, a point's no use in our situation, so just mm-hmm. go and try and win it, and if you get beaten you've only lost a point. And I think you saw that after the red card, like it looked like Alloa still went for it. You know, if we lose then we lose, it's not the end of the world. Montrose have always been a pretty decent watch under Stuart Petrie. It was good to see Blair Lyons in the score sheet and looking mm-hmm. like he played well, because I think I remember when he first burst onto the scene, I think he came from one of the uni teams, Stirling Uni or somewhere like that, and I remember watching him and thinking, this guy's going to be at Montrose for a season and then he's just going to move on, because it wasn't just that he looked technically really good. He had that kind of swagger about him, a wee bit of kind of arrogance in a good way about him, that, you know, the way that you look at a winger and you just think, I'd really like to boot you into the stand, but I'd also really like you to play for my team. So like, that's your options, Blair. And he went to Partick Thistle. And at the time I remember thinking that would be quite a good fit. Like, Ian McCall's good at getting a lot out of players like that. And it just never really happened for him for whatever reason. And it feels like he's maybe flatlined a little bit back at Montrose, but it looked like he had a good game here. I would say he took his goal well, but I wasn't convinced by the goalkeeping from PJ Morrison for the first one, where he kind of goes through him. Wasn't the most convincing, but the build-up play tip and everything from Blair Lyons was really nice. So between him and Taylor Stephen, you've probably got two of the best wingers at the moment, or wide players to watch in the division. I was just 11 minutes of two teams going balls out attacking. It was great. If you've not watched it and you're listening to this, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. It's absolutely fantastic fun.
It just looked like a class game. And you're right. So see, in terms of... So starting with Alloa first, see the way that they kind of lead the line now with Bobby Wales, Ethan Sutherland, Taylor Stephen. They are all teenagers? I just made that up.
Bobby Wales is certainly a teenager, Taylor Stephen's certainly a teenager, and Sutherland, I think, is 17.
I think Sutherland's
17.
I think Sutherland's the youngest. I was wondering if maybe one of them was 20. But they are so, so good. And I genuinely think that they will go on to have good careers. I don't want to make any bold predictions about where they'll end up. But I think they'll definitely make a success out of football. They're so good and so good to watch. And just Alloa in general, because I fully struggled with Alloa a wee bit, just because when Mike Mulroney was involved, he was clearly a big supporter of, or I always got the impression he was a big supporter of the Conservative and Unionist Party. And then they've also got this horrible habit of employing managers that I just struggle to take to, rightly or wrongly. Barry Ferguson and Brian Rice and Barry Smith. So maybe it's just an issue with the letter, the initial B. I don't know. But now, Mulroney's away. They've got Andy Graham as a manager. They play a really good style of football. They're happy to play like youth players. Andy Graham is just class to listen to. And I've really enjoyed watching them. And that's, like, I'm talking highly about Alloa. But what was, if I was an Alloa fan, what I think I would be hugely encouraged by was they went down to 10 men when Kevin Cawley was given a straight red card. But actually, when they scored the equaliser in the 57th minute or something, certainly, let's say midway through the second half, they're only like one winner. Like, all the chances that have been created, despite the fact they went to 10 men, was most of Alloa. And if anything, that winner for Montrose, despite the fact that they had the full complement of players, it was very much against the run of play. If I was an Alloa fan, I would be disappointed but hugely encouraged by what I was watching.
The only thing that would worry me, I guess, from an Alloa point of view is the defending for almost all the goals was awful. And, you know, part of me looks at it and goes, ah, well, fair play. Like, you're going all out attack. You're going, oh, well, if we lose a goal, then we'll just, you know, we'll just go and score one. But the defending, like, it was really, really bad. But I kind of glossed over it because I was enjoying watching them so much that I was just like, oh, well, Morgan Neal's missed his header or Scott Taggart's given the ball away. It doesn't really matter because you know they're going to score at the other end. They're certainly going to create chances. That would be the only thing that would maybe worry me a wee bit. But it looks like Andy Graham's got a team there playing with just complete freedom. Like, he's instilled confidence, particularly in the kind of younger players. To start with three teenagers in your attacking positions shows a lot of confidence in them. They're clearly relishing it. They're playing with freedom. And you know, you get young players on loan and they fall into one of two categories. They're either the type who think that they're the best player in the team and they're down here to prove a point and then kick on at their parent club. Or they're the type who are like, oh, hang on a minute, like Sean Dillon's going to try and kick me off the park and use all his 41 years of experience or whatever he's got. Or, you know, fans are now shouting at me and I'm not used to this physicality. And all three of them look like they're loving it. Like, they're just absolutely flying. And I think that's great to watch. I think it's not just the enjoyment aspect of winning games or scoring goals and all that. I think especially as a lower league fan, when you look at a player coming through and you think, oh, fancy this guy to go on and have a really good career for himself, it's just a nice feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, there's players that we've had on, like Stuart Finlay. He made his Scotland debut. I'm sure he scored. I wouldn't say it was San Marino at Hampden. I was so proud of him. Like, just, it must be what it's like to have your son score for Scotland or something. Like, when Chris Kane scored his first Premier League goal, delighted for him. I go on to Rotherham Forum sometimes and see what they're saying about Jamie Lindsay, just because I'm like, I'm just really proud to see you're doing well for yourself. Like, just, and these guys are all, like, some of them quite a bit older than me, but you just see that. And I think from an Alloa point of view, you'll enjoy watching these players, but then they'll maybe potentially be thinking, oh, 5 years' time, you know, what's the chances that one of these guys might go down south or might be playing for Scotland or something like that? It's just a really nice feeling to just watch it. And the whole mood around the club, I think we'd said it, talking about Andy Graham a wee while ago, like, he's going to pull everyone together. He's going to get everyone on board in a way that Brian Rice didn't really ever seem to do. He seemed quite distant, quite vague. Andy Graham looks like he's got everyone pulling in the right direction, and they might have lost this game, I don't think the fans are going to have any complaints because it was just enjoyable.
And what about Montrose? That a huge win for them. Suddenly they now they feel like the favourites for third place, but maybe fewer players in terms of the that kind of younger age bracket that could go into to bigger and better things. But certainly some of their maybe the more experienced players. So Hester scoring a goal, Dylan scoring a goal. His way his neck moved and then kind of powered his head forward. He looked like a child's toy. Like maybe if it was like a transformer that had some kind of special button that you could press. And Michael Gardine, who had two assists, so Gardine didn't even start the game. He had to come on due to an injury. So that maybe there was, maybe it was fate. But what do you think about Montrose in general? Do you think they will end up finishing in third place?
I certainly think they'll be in the playoffs, and I don't think they'll go up. But I think reaching the playoffs for a club like Montrose is, again, another really, really impressive achievement. They could go up. I would be surprised, but not shocked. Like, because they've just been so consistently good under Stuart Petrie and they're just so consistently improving. I also looked at it, because I looked at the Montrose team and I thought, like, Sean Dillon was really old when we last played Montrose. Signed a new contract, I think, this week.
And like, takes him past his 41st birthday or something, 42nd, but I can't remember quite. Certainly early 40s it takes him past him.
And he looks great. Like, I hated it when we played against him because I'm like, this guy cannot move. Like, he can't run. So why is he taking the ball off our strikers who's maybe like 21 years younger than him? Like, he's just walking about a park taking the ball off children. Like, he's just a force of nature, the way that he's gone through. And also, he's always in referees' ears and things like that, which just kind of further adds to his sort of dislikability. But I'm full of admiration for him. Same with Gardine. I mean, Gardine's not maybe the most likable character.
No.
I think a certain Inverness teammate would probably agree with me on that one. Like, there's been quite a few stories about Michael Gardine maybe being a slightly suspect character, but he's a very good player technically. Like, he's always been very, very good in the ball, can give you a wee bit of quality in the final third, and not somebody who's ever really been reliant on having pace or, you know, having that box-to-box ability. So as he gets a bit older, he's still got the quality in the ball, and they've still kind of got legs round about him that can do a job. So I've always been full of admiration for Montrose. I actually got a Montrose top. I bought it in a sale because I just really like them. And you know that thing when you see a football top and you're just like, 20 quid Montrose top? Yeah, like, I can't really. So I've got a Montrose top. So I've got a lot of time for Montrose, a lot of admiration for them. I love Stuart Petrie as a manager. I really enjoyed doing post-match with him. He's one of the managers that I sort of miss from being down in League 2 because he was just a really pleasant, interesting, funny, decent guy to do post-match with, somebody that I always kind of really enjoyed it with. And I think he's almost slowly beginning the transition of this team. So like the spine of this Montrose team has been the same for a very long time. And I think just ever so slightly, we're maybe starting to see a transition in it. Maybe ever so slightly. The one that I thought at the time was a phenomenal signing was Hester, and he's not been as prolific as I maybe thought he would be, having seen him in League 2 last season. But I think he's going to find his feet in League 1. It might just be a wee bit of a slow burner. They'll finish in the playoffs. I'm very, very confident of that. Firstly, because I think they're a good team, and secondly, because I don't think there's anyone particularly better than them below it. But I do wonder how much they'll have to change things in the summer. You know, like Paul Watson's getting a wee bit older. Like we said, Dylan, phenomenal player, coming up to or past his 40th birthday now. Not everyone can go on forever. Even guys like Andrew Steeves, who I'm a massive fan of, just getting a wee bit older right throughout the team. I do wonder how much they'll need to speed up that transition, but a team that I always have enjoyed watching, and a team that Dumbarton have basically said that's their aim, is to be like Montrose. Unfortunately, we don't have Stuart Petrie, so that's the biggest issue that we face amongst many, or a pitch that's playable.
I totally agree about Montrose, and I think they are in, I suppose, like a similar-ish position to maybe a Broth were in under Dick Campbell. So it's like, right, these players have absolutely been your bedrock for your success for a number of years now, but they are going to be turned over at some point. How do you do that successfully? I don't think Dick Campbell done it particularly successfully, hence the fact he's now in Methil. Can Stuart Petrie do it? I don't think it's quite as severe at Montrose, to be fair, but I think Stuart Petrie has a similar-ish job to do, but I think he's a very good manager, so I suspect he will do it. And you're right about Kane Hester. He's been, I mean, in fairness, he was stepping up a level maybe the second half of his season last year wasn't quite as prolific as the first half, so maybe it shouldn't be a huge surprise that he's at. Has he made double figures even for league goals yet? Not entirely sure he has. Maybe just under, maybe just over, I'm not sure. I'd have to check. But I have been, I suppose, a wee bit disappointed by Hester so far. But you're right, I do trust Petrie to A, get him in the playoffs firstly, and I'd imagine he could do a decent kind of turnover in that squad. Not a huge one, but I think he can freshen it up in the summer. And I'd imagine, again, they'll be one of the better League One teams next year, if they don't get promoted. Which I've already said, I don't think they will, because ninth will win the playoffs. There is one other team we'll just very, very quickly touch on that could finish in the playoffs for League One, and that is Cove Rangers. Now, Cove had a setback in midweek. They lost 1-0 to Falkirk, deservedly so. I thought Falkirk were far and away the better team. There was a contentious decision right at the end, admittedly. But what I loved about this was, now, whether it was to do with the refereeing decision, whether it was to do with who was actually writing the words, but this 1-0 defeat to Falkirk brought out the salty match reports from Cove Rangers. We have not seen this for a while. Like, the first time it was brought to my attention was when they lost to Cowdenbeath in the League 2 playoff. Never read a match report like it in my life. Absolutely unbelievable. This one was, again, very, very salty. Didn't deserve to lose. Referee was bang out of order. Falkirk. Put it this way, the match report, I felt, didn't represent the 90 minutes that unfolded.
Also, to do it for a Falkirk game when you know they're probably one of the most active fan bases in the lower leagues on Twitter, like you're not. You could see if you played Edinburgh City or Stranraer or someone like that, you can maybe get away with it when they've got quite a small fan base. The Falkirk fans, not only do they despise Cove because of the Paul Hartley connection, they've then gone up, beaten them 1-0. Cove have put up this salty match report. Falkirk are romping to the league title. Like, I would have so much fun with that if I was a Falkirk fan. On the other hand, I want to know who writes them. There's no byline on them, I don't think. I want to know who this individual who writes Cove Rangers match reports is. I want to get to know him. I want to, like, go to a game with him. Just, I want to see how he sees the game, because I imagine it's like, you know, we've all got like a pal or a family member who just sees the game through like completely club tinted eyes. They cannot see any different to it. I want to know how severe this guy is, because he must be worse than most people I know. Like, I'm so fascinated.
The thing is, I think I only know, well, not know personally, but I think I'm only aware of two Cove Rangers fans. The brilliant one on Pine Bothrell, who's posted this like all the way through the leagues, who is so kind of fair-minded. And this one that writes the match reports, who is the opposite. So I'm guessing it's definitely not the same person.
It would be quite funny if it was, and he posts on Pine Bovril in a really measured way, but he only does it after he's written his really salty Cove match report. So he gets all
once
the anger
once he's took a breath.
Out. Yeah, gets all that post-match anger out, and then he's like, right, that's that done. Put that in a box to one side, and now I can go and look at it objectively. Like, I really like the idea of that.
But do you actually, I mean, to be fair, again, I might stick up for them just to play devil's advocate. Not for how salty the match report was. I mean, I used to do the match reports for the Raith Rovers website, and literally, like, what I was told beforehand, under no circumstances can you write anything that might embarrass the club or a player, either of Raith Rovers or the opponents. But I don't know if he necessarily heeds that message. Maybe he never got that message. Maybe it was slightly different.
We do something. So I write the opposition pages for the Dumbarton programme, and the only rule I was told was don't write anything that they can pin up on their dressing room wall. That's the rule that we go by. So it doesn't matter if we're playing a team who have won flipping one game in 27. Like, I'll always write about them like they're Real Madrid. So you can notice that. And they then can't pin it up on their wall.
See, my favourite ever opposition notes in a programme was, so the season Raith Rovers won the League Cup, with two games to go, it was almost neck and neck between them and Dunfermline to win the first division. And they played each other at Starts Park. If Dunfermline had won, they would have went ahead of Raith with one game to go. So a draw would have been fine, and a win would have won Raith Rovers a league. And the opposition notes was for every single Dunfermline player. So it was like Ian Westwater. So let's see, it was something along the lines of, long-term Dunfermline goalkeeper, incredible career, played 452 games for Dunfermline, but the final sentence was, won't be playing in the UEFA Cup next season. And every single Dunfermline, literally every single player, won't be playing in the UEFA Cup next season. The guy got the sack. got the sack for him program. So he certainly didn't live by the kind of morals that you have.
Yeah, that's somebody who was not told in his first day writing the programme that there are no rules, simply do not pin it up in the dressing room wall. Because I imagine every single Dunfermline player had that programme pinned up behind their wall. Like, we'll show this guy.
Didn't do them any good. It was a 0-0 draw. We won the league on the last day of the season. So there you go.
And none of them did play in the UEFA Cup the following season.
I'd have to check. I mean, I don't think it would take me that long, but I'm fairly certain they didn't know.
So who had the last laugh there?
The guy that got sacked from the Raith Rovers programme. And me. I'm bringing it up.
You're bringing it up.
30 years later.
And he never has to write a programme again. So it's a win-win.
So are we both agreeing that even though Cove have had a, you know, not necessarily an upturn in fortunes recently, but a wee bit further back, Cove looked like they were definitely going to win the playoffs. And we're now both under the impression that that won't be the case.
Yes, I think Cove, remember they went on that really good run of form? I was just trying to bring it up. About 10 games, I think they drew 1-8, drew 1, lost 1, something like that. I think that's maybe papering over quite a few cracks.
And do you think if they don't make the playoffs, bear in mind, in fairness, they're hybrid, I suppose, do you think anything would happen to Paul Hartley?
I don't imagine so. I'd say that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the obvious family connections. And secondly, it doesn't feel like they've got a big enough fan base to really put pressure on. So say Falkirk didn't go up this season, Falkirk fan base would be on McGlynn's back and he probably wouldn't still be their manager. The Hamilton fan base, I'm surprised John Rankin's still there. I don't think he will be next season. Cove doesn't feel like, it feels like to a lot of people they're maybe a second club. Like they'll go and watch Aberdeen and then they'll go and watch Cove and they're maybe not all that fussed who the manager is. So there might be some voices calling for him to go, but I don't think they'll be loud enough for anyone to take notice of.
Agreed. I think he'll be in charge next season, regardless of what happens. And I think they won't finish in the playoffs. Okay, so let's drop into League Two. And Fraser, I'm so sorry. I initially thought that we could have started with Clyde 2, Elgin 1. I felt like the logical place to start. However, that result was superseded by Tuesday evening's incredible scoreline, which was Shamrar 5, Dumbarton 0. Bear in mind, Shamrar have barely scored any goals this season, barely created any goal scoring opportunities this season, are trying to keep their necks above that 10th place spot. Dumbarton, at one point you fancied them to be title challengers, very much in the equation for finishing in the top four, but this was 5-0 going on significantly more. Fraser, tell me your thoughts.
Thank goodness I didn't have to drive up the A77 on Tuesday night. That's my main thought watching it. The only caveat I want to throw out is that this is not totally unprecedented. You might remember last season Dumbarton lost 5-1 to Albion Rovers at home.
Yes.
So I would just warn the Stranraer fans, like, please don't read too much into this because it did not work out well for Albion Rovers last season. And that was 5-1 going on 9 or 10. Like, that was one of the most dominant performances I've seen. Should I start with Stranraer? It's probably fair. That's to be disingenuous to focus on our failings. I thought they were very, very good. Yep. I think Dylan Forrest is a bit of a superstar, to be honest. He was the best player on the park by a mile. There was, you know, a lot of good performances, obviously, from Stranraer players. Chris Johnson played well. Kyle Fleming played very well. Matty Grant played well. But Dylan Forrest just looks in a different class to most of his teammates. And I think he'll be, I fancy him to step up to League One. I know Craig Telfer's a big admirer of him. I wouldn't be shocked to see him at Steny. I wouldn't even be shocked if someone like Montrose thought, hang on a minute, he's young, he's still going to get better, looking very mobile, he's looking very handy in League Two, he won't command a huge wage. I think he'll be attracting plenty of admirers. His goal probably summed up both teams' performances. So Sean Crichton, I think it was, passes the ball right to him in the middle of the park and he just runs past like the most half-arsed challenges you've ever seen, opens up his body and just places the ball in the net. It's like, you know those games that I think German teams do it a lot? They play like a fifth division team and they win like 17-0, something like that in pre-season. That's what I imagine the 15th goal in that 17-0 looks like. It's just a kind of much fitter, much stronger player running past a bunch of guys who are kind of thinking, there's not really any point in trying to catch him, and then making finishing look really, really easy. So I thought he was excellent right throughout the park, though. I mean, like, it sounds daft because it was 5-0, but like, Lewis Boudinakis in goals, didn't put a foot wrong. His handling was really secure, made a couple of decent saves.
I thought he had two excellent saves when the game was probably still in the balance, maybe one at 1-0 and one at maybe just before half time. Maybe that would have given Dumbarton some hope going into the second half.
He made one at 1-0 when Carlo Pinatiello had dug out across the back post to Tony Wallace, which is like one of Son's go-to ways of scoring, swing across into Tony Wallace at the back post. It was really close range. He probably should have scored, but Boudinakis stood up pretty well, and then he denied Michael Ruth. It might have even been 2-0 at that point, just before half-time, or 3-0. I'm not really... 3-0, I think it would have been. Michael Ruth went through one-on-one, just kind of forgot to use his legs. You know, do you ever have that dream where you can't run? Michael Ruth kind of had that, but he couldn't shoot. So like, he got the ball and he was just getting closer and closer to the goalkeeper, and his brain must have been like, kick the ball, kick the ball, kick the ball. And he just kept running until Lewis Boudinakis slid out and kind of saved it at his feet. So I thought he played well. From a Dumbarton point of view, I said in Pine Bovril, I think that's probably Suns at their lowest ebb now since 2007-08, when we finished 8th in the third division.
So even worse than the playoff defeat at the end of last season?
Yeah, because Annan went on to get promoted, so they were a very good team, and the playoff defeat last season was embarrassing. Suns were 3-0 down, but then they went down to 10 men, and Annan basically thought, great, this is fantastic. So that was embarrassing in terms of getting beaten 6-0, but at least you're beaten 6-0 by a team who went on to win promotion, and a team with an awful lot of quality who were scoring goals, and that's not really the case with Stranraer, and that's not to take away from them at all. But Suns beat them 2 weeks earlier, and I thought, I fear for Stranraer a wee bit. I didn't see a great deal there.
Yep.
In this game, a fortnight later, suddenly they score 5 goals into you. 5 goals going on 7 or 8. Like, Scott Robertson has an incredible miss from about 2 yards out where he balloons a ball over the stand. It was just like, it was just so, so dismal. The goals that were lost were embarrassing. You look at the players that played, so that back five was Aaron Linus at right back, Sean Crichton and Gallagher Lennon at centre back, Jay Hogarth in goals, obviously, and then Ryan Blair at left back. You may be going, Crichton's is good enough. Linus has been in and out of the team this season and hasn't really shown the form of last season. Ryan Blair is a central midfielder playing at left back, and my goodness, does he look like a central midfielder playing at left back. And Gallagher Lennon's a kid who's came in and looked out of his depth, to be honest. He's young and inexperienced, so he makes the mistakes you'd expect of a young and inexperienced player, but then he doesn't have the legs to basically cover for it. So you see a lot of lone players will come down and they'll get caught out by something, but then they've got that turn of pace, or they've got that engine that they can just bail themselves out for it. He doesn't. So it's almost like a worst of both worlds. Not that it's entirely his fault, and I don't want to lay all the blame on an 18-year-old, because there are more senior players around him who are just not doing it. But I think that we'll look back, or Suns fans will look back on that defence and go, like, a few years' time, probably no wonder. Like, that's no left back, a right back who's barely played all season, and a centre back who is toiling really, really badly at this level. It was just absolutely horrible all in. Just everything about that performance looked dreadful.
It very much looked horrible if you were a Dumbarton fan. I'm not a Dumbarton fan. I laughed a lot. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean it because, like, football's funny when these things happen. And I laughed at a Pine Bovril thread. It's one of the funniest Pine Bovril threads I've read for a long time. And that includes the Morton fan recently, who was annoyed at the fact that Morton's 3-year plan sees them, like, what their desire is to finish in the top 16 places in Scotland for the next 3 years. But he suggested that wasn't ambitious enough, even though they've only done it twice in the last 25 years. And when he was getting a bit of heat for that opinion, to try and answer the doubters, he said, listen, because of my positive mindset, my daughter got her first ever job. Like, fair play to him. Like, to use that defence was very, very interesting. However, this Stranraer Dumbarton match said, very, very good. And I think because a lot of terrible things are happening. So to start with, it sounded like the the feed wasn't very good. The stream wasn't very good. It sounded like it was very jumpy, but you were still able to see Stranraer's first goal. Then, from what I can gather, the stream broke. So I was like, oh, that'll be that then. But then the guys at Stranraer TV, they explained it was something to do with how powerful their internet was, or their Wi-Fi. They managed to get it back online, but they managed to get it back online literally seconds before Dumbarton scored their second goal. Then the rest of that first half obviously just ran away from Dumbarton, 4-0 at half time. And then I did enjoy the Dumbarton fan that said, if that Stranraer fan with the golf club can just come round and put me out of my misery, that would be absolutely perfect. It was just a very, very funny thread in general. Unfortunately for yourself, but again, like similar, I suppose similar to, not quite as extreme, but similar to the Stenny Clyde game. Just a weird game that you did not see coming at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Stenny Clyde game was considerably more weird in that they've been exceptional all season, and it felt, you know, if Dumbarton had gone down there and lost 3-0, I think outsiders might have been surprised. I don't think any Suns fans would have been hugely surprised. It just feels like that turn of the year thing again. And just, and the only weird thing I can say about it is that that was the exact team that played Peterhead at the weekend and very deservedly beat them. Mm-hmm. Now, Peterhead aren't in great form at the moment. They were really, really poor at the weekend. But how can a team beat Peterhead, second in the league, 1-0, and then the exact same 11 players ship 5 goals to a Stranraer team who, probably if they'd lost that, would have been favourites for the drop?
Yep.
Because with Clyde hitting form and Stranraer looking out of form, it just really, really weird. Like, one of those ones where I think if I was in your shoes and I was looking at it as an outsider looking in, I mean, I found the highlights in places quite funny. So, like, I can only imagine how much enjoyment that you got out of them. Because it gets to that stage, you know, with your team when you just have to laugh. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what's coming and you're just like, oh, how are we going to concede this one? And then it's even better than you imagined. I think people would have been shocked externally. I was not massively shocked. Shocked at the margin of the scoreline, not really shocked at anything else. Like, it just, like I said, the Albion Rovers game last season, it just feels like Stevie Farrell Dumbarton teams after the turn of the year, first of all, aren't very good. And second of all, just have this ability to capitulate. Like, when things start going wrong, wow, they go seriously wrong, like incredibly wrong. And I think it'll be really interesting to see, firstly, his team lineup this weekend, and secondly, to see how Suns respond. Because sometimes you get a team gets an absolute piking and they come back and they actually get a decent result. We're away at East Fife this weekend. Fifth place in the league, East Fife this weekend. An East Fife team who know if they win, there'll only be 6 points between the teams. Like, they're gonna be looking at that and they're gonna be licking their lips. They'll really, really fancy that. So I think it's a huge test to Stevie Farrell. I think, especially with Bayview being so close to you're so close to the dugouts at Bayview, if we lose that game, it could get a wee bit unpleasant, I would imagine.
I think it would be remiss of us to move on without mentioning Brian Martin. Like, I totally appreciate that sometimes this podcast can sound like a kind of Brian Martin and Lawrence Nelson Stan podcast. However, an incredible 90 minutes for Brian Martin. I mean, we'll get to how he described the fifth goal, but, like, obviously there was issues with the footage. So I'm guessing this is why the second goal was kind of filmed from behind Brian Martin's head. But the fact that you could see, you know, it felt like a nature documentary. See, when you see like an animal in an environment or doing something you've never seen before, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. Like Blue Planet or something, and you're seeing a jellyfish mate. Like, wow, never seen a jellyfish mate before. So you're getting to see Brian Martin standing up because Stranraer scored a second goal, and you can actually see and hear him. See and hear his actions. It was wonderful. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But, like, never mind the kind of Denon Lang description. You know what I really enjoyed? Like, he was lead commentator for this game, and he had it sounded like a young guy, Ewan
Holm, I think.
I think you're right. I think it's Ewan Holm, who I don't know if he'd done it before. He was absolutely fine. Fair play to him. But, like, let's say you wanted your co-commentator to make a point. You might just leave a gap. and let him or her speak. Or you might say, what did you think of that, Ewan, or whatever. But Brian, Brian would get really, really excited about the fact that Shinrad have scored a goal again. And he's worked up to the nines. And then as soon as he's made his point, he'd go, Ewan! Like, really, like, scream it. Like, for every goal, like, I think for goal 2, 3, and 4, he'd go, Ewan! But he delivered that name as if he was admonishing a young child that was running about and wouldn't behave itself.
Or shouting every down goal,
and it was, like, honestly, it was so, so funny. Poor Ewan. Ewan was fine. But it was just, again, Brian Martin, I am in awe. But that fifth goal, you actually sent it. You messaged me to say, have you heard this yet? And I hadn't heard it. But a tremendous way to round off the scoring.
See, the thing is as well, so I obviously sat through, I was going to say 90 minutes. I think the stream was down for about 20 minutes, 70 minutes of watching my team get scudded 5-0. And it would be very easy to get wound up with the commentator. I was just sitting agreeing with him. He was like, I don't know why Stevie Farrell hasn't taken Michael Ruth off. I mean, the game's beyond him. And like, he's just run himself into the ground. They've got a big game this weekend. I'm like sitting there going, Brian, go down and tell him. Like, you're right. You're absolutely spot on.
You should have said Ewan.
Ewan, get down there and tell that Farrell. But he was absolutely bang on. Like, pretty much everything he said during the game, I agreed with or I enjoyed listening to. And for a fan of a team, watching your team get beaten 5-0, and having to listen to the commentary of an opposition commentator who is quite partisan, but I think he's partisan, but he's fair. Like, he just very much calls it like he sees it. And I almost felt as frustrated and as disappointed as I was from Dumbarton's point of view. Like, I've been there, I've commentated in my team. I've only seen us, I think, score 5 goals once. Like, I appreciate what he was feeling as that fifth goal went in, as that fourth goal went in, where you know, you've got that buzz, you've got the disbelief, you're trying to keep your cool, but you're kind of like, hang on a minute here. I never came out with something as good as Bang Bang Darren Lang, like, which is just phenomenal. And I was saying to you, or I was saying to Telfer, I can't remember, it was one of you, that one of my pals, his stream was ahead of mine. So he just messaged me, block capitals, Bang Bang Darren Lang. And I was like, what's this? And I literally opened up the message and looked at it as the goal went in. So it was like he was narrating my text messages, which is a really special feeling.
That is a rhyme that the Dumbarton poet could never conceive. And in terms of how that leaves the bottom end of League Two, like, who do you think, so can Clyde get out of it? And if they are going to get out of it, who is going to get sucked in?
I've said for basically since January, I think Clyde will be fine. And then they had a couple of dodgy results, and I was going, when they lost out to Stranraer, I was going, oh, maybe you won't be fine anymore. I think Clyde will be fine. I'm more confident than ever that they'll be fine. The club who I'm maybe fearing for a wee bit more than anyone now is Bonnyrigg. And they'd got a decent result in terms of scoring in the last minute against Spartans. Their form since the turn of the year, I think they've won one game since the turn of the year. That was at home to Elgin. Elgin, who famously do not win away games. They've done it once, I think, over the past calendar year now. Bonnyrigg are the ones I fear for because I don't see anything to get excited about in that squad. Like, they're fine. But I look about and you think, Stranraer obviously got that result. Stranraer also have Chris Johnson, a player who's like really capable at that level of coming up with a bit of magic. He was a really big player for Annan last season doing just that. Clyde have got quite a few capable players, and, you know, guys like Jace KBR, Martin Rennie scored a decent number of goals. Robbie Leach is a good player at this level. Like, they've got quite a few players who I think would get into most squads, if not most teams. You look round about Elgin, I've done some good business. They're now back down in ninth, and they're going to need to win a few other away games, mm-hmm. I suspect, between now and the end of the season. Good news for them is that they play us, I think, in the second last weekend of the season. So that'll be another 3 points in the bag for Alan Hale, left. And co. like Mark Gallagher at Elgin, really, really like look at him. Deshaun Golding, we were talking about Chris Kane earlier. Maybe Deshaun Golding's not the most aesthetically pleasing. He's probably very frustrating to watch. Quite a handy player. Bonnyrigg, I don't think I have anyone like that. So they're the team that I'm now looking at and thinking, I can see their slide over the next couple of weeks, maybe just gradually getting closer and closer. And if they drop to bottom, do I think they'll have enough to turn it around? Oh, I don't know. Stranraer are maybe the second weakest team in that division. I don't see Bonnyrigg. I didn't think Stranraer had a 5-0 in them, to be fair. I don't see Bonnyrigg having a 5-0 in them. So they would be the one now that I would maybe fear for the most.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that too much. It was interesting. I thought the Clyde Elgin result this Saturday was arguably not more impressive. That's not the correct term, but similar to the Stranraer result against Dumbarton, I still sometimes think it's, you shouldn't read too much into freak results. And just because Clyde have put six past Stenny on a day when everything went right for Clyde and everything went wrong for Stenny, you still have to follow that up. And to follow that up against an Elgin team that are far better now than they were at the start of the season, I was really impressed by that. So I am starting to think that Clyde could get out. And you said something the last time we'd done a podcast, that even if Clyde were to finish 10th, they might be able to beat, whether it's East Kilbride or Brechin or Bucky or whoever it is that they're playing. I probably now believe that a wee bit more now. In terms of who can get sucked in, I still think Stranraer could, because again, I still feel that result was a freak. And you're right, Bonnyrigg might have the weakest squad. That was certainly a big point in midweek against Spartans. But there was something about them at the start of the season. I don't know what it was, but bearing in mind we were talking about them being an outside chance of getting in the top four, that's certainly going to be the case. Maybe the players just hate being covered in mud every second Saturday. And if that is the case, then they're really going to struggle, because my goodness, that is a desperate, desperate park. Or it looks like a desperate park to play on. But yes, I totally agree. I think it's between Clyde, Stranraer and Bonnyrigg. Would I like to call it? No. Who would I fancy? I would certainly fancy Clyde and Stranraer more if they did finish 10th in a playoff than Bonnyrigg, for whatever reason.
I just find Bonnyrigg uninspiring. Like, they don't, I think that they are a solid team. They don't concede a huge number of goals. They've got a good goalkeeper. They've got a competent defence at that level. They've got like a really solid enough defence. It's not like they've got world beaters, guys you think are going to go on to a higher level or anything like that. Just guys who'll get a job done in League Two, and just progressively as you go up the team. You know that meme that's a drawing of the horse, the back end of the horse really nicely drawn. And the top end is just like a child's finished off with a pencil. That's a wee bit like Bonnyrigg, just with their striking options. I thought Declan Byrne was not a bad player for Dumbarton. He just had a really, really bad time with injury. He's probably the best finisher they've got. Like, I think he was possibly the best finisher Dumbarton had. He couldn't get in the team playing one up front and being injured as much as he was. And then the former Michael Ruth and then Ryan Wallace before he retired and all that sort of stuff. But I don't see Declan Byrne particularly suiting the style that they're trying to play. Kieran McGackie's still playing quite a lot. I think it's probably a level too far from now. Like, I think maybe if they'd been promoted a couple of seasons earlier, I think he would have been a really capable player at League Two level. I know he played for Annan and Clyde in his younger career, but just since he developed as a player, I think he probably would have been quite a capable League Two player. Maybe just a wee bit too far from now. Like, the other options they've had up there, like Smart Osadolar, You might get a couple of good games a season out of him, but he's not going to get in the squad of any of the other teams around about them. I think they're also probably, like you say, a wee bit sick of that pitch. Like, I can't criticise Bonnyrigg's pitch, because my team play on a pitch that looks like the sort of place you get potatoes. But I feel like Suns players are sick of playing on that pitch, and that's probably the same for Bonnyrigg. Like, you go into home games and suddenly you've not got much of a home advantage, because although you know that pitch, you can't really play football on it. So the opposition are like, right, it's a novelty, roll our sleeves up, get on with this for 90 minutes. And we're like, how many more home games have we got? Five. Oh, right, okay, five more home games on this absolutely hopeless surface that you can't pass a ball 5 yards on. I did notice as well, when Bonnyrigg beat Falkirk in the Scottish Cup, was John McGlynn saying that Bonnyrigg don't have a groundsman?
Oh, did he?
I think he came out and said something like that. How does a team at this level not have a groundsman? I don't know if he was just lashing out at the state of the pitch.
He does tend to lash out.
But maybe if they don't have a groundsman, maybe over the summer they should get one. A groundsman.
Not Dumbartons,
though.
Don't hire Dumbartons, whatever you do.
No, please do. A man who seems to administer sand is the solution to all of life's problems. Just cover it in sand. It'll be fine.
Well, listen, I think comparing Bonnyrigg to a child's drawing of a horse is a fine way to finish. Now, if you haven't signed up for the Patreon, then I think you absolutely should. There is content going out on every single day. On that, however, The free podcast go out every Monday and Thursday normally. However, next week, just to make you aware, the free podcast, rather than a Monday, is going to become the Tuesday podcast, but that's just because the final Scottish Cup tie is on the Monday evening. The other thing to make you aware of, is that the best moments of Scottish football, which kind of goes out quarterly, I think we generally announce it as a list, that's actually going out over the weekend. It's going to be going out on YouTube and will go out on the Patreon to start with, and then we'll go out free to air next week. So again, another reason to perhaps sign up for the Patreon. But Fraser, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for being better company than Dumbarton against Stranraer, excluding Brian Martin, and a West Dumbartonshire Council meeting.
And thanks for being better company, Fraser, than the final 30 minutes of Ardrossan versus Raith Rovers. Take care. Sports Social Podcast Network.